Well, it is good to be back with everyone on this beautiful Sabbath day. Originally, I hadn't planned to be down here on the Sabbath. I was going to wait and come down tomorrow, but getting some new countertops put in at in the kitchen of the house up in Bella Vista, and I got to thinking about how much work I've got to do to get ready for that, and I thought, you know, I better come down here on Friday, be here for the Sabbath so I can go to work real early Sunday morning. So that's what I'm planning on doing. But it is good to be with you. I meant to bring my knife up here because I wanted to find out where the steak was that went with that knife. I didn't see that. So I really appreciated that message in the sermonette. I think it's so apropos sometimes. I know I've been guilty of kicking my tongue in gear before my brain was engaged, and sometimes that gets us in a lot of trouble, as was pointed out. You know, all of you are familiar with Hebrews chapter 11. You know what that chapter is noted for. We call that the faith chapter. Because in that chapter lists a whole multitude of examples in the scriptures of men and women who exhibited great faith and what that faith did for them. And we also know that God tells us that without faith it is impossible for us to please God. So therefore, you know, I'm not too smart, but I can kind of put two and two together. It tells me that I need to have faith. So I thought, you know, here we have a faith chapter filled with examples, men and women who exhibited great faith in their lives. So if I want to grow in faith, if I want to understand faith more deeply, then what better place to go than the examples that are given to us there in Hebrews 11. So in going through those examples, I thought, well, I could speak on every one of them, and we would still be here this time tomorrow talking about them. So I thought, well, I need to choose one. And I thought, well, as I went through those and looked at them and thought about the different examples, I thought of one example that I wanted to talk about today, because I think there is and not just this one person, but about one event in this person's life. Because there's so much in here for us to learn. Not only about the faith and character of that individual that we want to emulate, but also examples of other people in this story that we don't want to emulate. So we can learn both sides of it, so to speak, in going through this. And that example is that of the prophet Daniel. And we're going to look at one event in Daniel's life that you're all very familiar with. So this is not anything new to you. But hopefully as we go through this, we'll be able to point out some things in here that will help all of us grow in our relationship with God. And this is a story of Daniel in the lion's den. Now, how many of you heard this story when you were little kids? If you remember back that far, of course. You know. Sure, we did. You know, this story has really been popularized in the Christian world, and it's used as an example of faith in the ability of God to save us from very difficult situations. And yeah, this is one of the primary lessons we can glean from this compelling event. This is why this event of Daniel stopping the mouths of the lions through faith, and therefore, as it says, obtaining a good report, good testimony through that faith, that's why it's recorded for us in Hebrews 11. You know, it's for us to go back and look at this example and grow in faith from that example. We also know that a lot of our understanding of what has transpired on the world scene in the past and what is going to be coming in the near future is found in our understanding of many of the prophecies that God gave to Daniel. But one of the most beneficial aspects of the life of Daniel for those of us today who are striving to live godly lives is found really in many of the details we see in this particular event that happened with Daniel and his experience of being thrown into this den of lions. And what led up to that event which, as we will see, had a great deal to do with the very message we had in the sermonette today. Valuable lessons for us to learn. But we know that from this event, we find encouragement and we find hope when we are struggling in our own personal lives with difficulties that do come upon us. In Daniel's example, we are encouraged to be resolute, to be constant, and also in our, well, we, to, I said that wrong, to be resolute and constant in our abhorrence and resistance to evil. At the same time, we learn that we are to be ever steadfast in that which is good and pleasing to God. And we find strength from God to achieve this. And this is very important. Whatever the cost might be to us from a human standpoint. Sometimes we humans look at our lives and we gauge everything about on what we are dealing with, what we're going through. And sometimes when that's our focus, we lose sight of what God is doing through and in us. And that's what we want to always come back to. So as we look at Daniel, there's one thing we must never lose sight of. Daniel and other examples in the scriptures, especially there in Hebrews 11, those people were no different than you and I. Now we might read their stories and we might think they were somehow a notch above us, or somehow they had something unique to them. No, they were men and women just like us. And we have to remember that when we read their stories. Whenever and however God was willing to intervene in their lives, He is just as willing and just as capable of performing the same miracles in our lives. The question is, do we really believe that? The same God that worked in the life of Daniel is the very same God who is actively working in our lives. It's no different. It isn't a different God. He isn't doing different things. He isn't working in different ways. He's still actively working in the lives of His people. We see reflected in Daniel's relationship with God what could, in fact it should, be reflected in our relationship with God. Hebrews 11 tells us, without faith, it's impossible to please God. The faith we see in Daniel is the same faith you and I must have toward God. So we can't read these as just some nice little Bible story that sounds good, you know. It's got to mean something to us. It's got to help us grow spiritually in the things that God wants us to grow in. And faith is one of the biggies that we must have and must be growing in all the time. And like Daniel, as we will see, we should be found innocent toward God, before God, actually. In fact, that's the title, if you want a title for today's sermon. Being found innocent before God. And as we go through this example of Daniel in the lion's den, I think we'll begin to understand what this meant for Daniel and what it should mean for each of us. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time rehearsing the history of Daniel and how Daniel came to be in the position we find him in here in the sixth chapter of Daniel. But Daniel, along with many of the young Jewish men, had been taken captive from Judah, had been brought to Babylon as captives, and this was under Nebuchadnezzar back around 605 BC, actually. Through his wisdom and faithfulness to God, Daniel rose in power and ultimately became first among the three highest officers under the king of the Medo-Persian Empire. And he served at least to the best we can tell, he served at least until around 530 BC at the end of the reign of King Cyrus. So he was there serving in the government, if you would, through these three kings. So this is where we want to begin to look at the life of Daniel when he was serving under the reign and service of King Darius around 539 B.C. So here in Daniel 6, I want to go through this chapter. So mark this chapter because we'll go a couple other places, but we're going to come back here because there's so much in this story for us to learn from, to glean from. Daniel chapter 6, beginning in verse 1. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom. Now, satrap was simply a government official, if you would. And he put these 120 men over his various parts of his government to help him in ruling over the kingdom. And he says, and over these three governors, so he placed over these 120 three governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give account to them so that the king would suffer no loss. So they were to take care of the king's business so that the king could actually govern and he wouldn't lose out on all the wealth he could accumulate from the people, if you want to put it bluntly. Verse 3. Then this Daniel, notice, distinguished himself above the governors and the satraps because an excellent spirit was in him. And the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. You see, what the people saw in Daniel and what the king saw in Daniel was a man of integrity, of honor, of emotional maturity. He had a quality about him that was rare in men, both then and today. That which is called here an excellent spirit. Like Daniel, we should live lives that reflect this excellent spirit. Lives that make us stand out favorably among the people that we interact with daily. We should ask ourselves, how am I viewed by other people? Do people, without really knowing what it is, do they just naturally sense in you that you're different than most people in how you conduct your life? Do they notice a difference in your demeanor, a difference in your conversation, how you use your tongue? Do they notice a difference in your actions, in your reactions to things that happen in this life? Do they notice a different outlook on life in general? Do people see in us a genuine heart that loves our brother and our fellow man? The question is, do they see in us the excellent spirit that people saw in the prophet Daniel? As we go through this, I hope all of us are comparing ourselves to Daniel in the many ways that we can. Let's continue on in verse 4. Here in verse 4, we have entered into this story, the dark side, if you would, of man's nature. This is some of that negative side that we need to look at and then examine ourselves in light of some of this. Verse 4, so the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful. Nor was there any error or fault found in him. We have to look at this and ask the question, what was at the core of these men's desire to find fault with Daniel? Why were they wanting to do this? Why was there such an ill will against both Daniel's greatness that was evident in him, as well as his goodness and faithfulness toward his king? Well, could it have been motivated by their envy over him being advanced above them, or the possibility of him being advanced? Has that ever happened in the realm of mankind? Every day. Or was there hatred kindled toward him because of this excellent spirit that was evident in Daniel because of his integrity and honesty. Daniel, no doubt, took great care to ensure the king's affairs were protected from others among the satraps and governors that might have been inclined to cheat the king in some way. They knew they weren't going to get Daniel's support in anything that they would do against the king at their own gain. They weren't going to be allowed by Daniel to cook the books, if you would, and enrich themselves. Now, no doubt, both of these were at play in these events. Envy and jealousy have been the downfall of so many people throughout man's existence. Notice, keep your place here in Daniel's. Go back a few pages to, we're going to Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes, verse 4. Notice what Solomon says here. Solomon, remember, was the wisest of all men. Here in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, he describes this hideous tendency we have in our nature. All of us have it. Don't think we don't. We do have. Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 4. He writes, "Again I saw that for all the toil, every skillful work of a man is envied by his neighbor. This is also as vanity and grasping for the wind." People are just naturally envious of what other people do, what other people's abilities they have, what other people may possess. We see this evident everywhere you look. It's something you and I have to be aware of is in us. Have you ever felt twinges of jealousy because of something someone else received or got or did? And somehow deep inside you say, "Man, wish that was me." Sure we have. It's something we do naturally almost because it's in our nature. A nature we have to fight against constantly. It seems the more successful a person is, the more talented he or she is, the more capable he is in his endeavors, the worse he's thought of by his rivals. Lest we forget where such thinking comes from, this is the same attitude we find that overpowered Satan and turned him against his very Creator and turned him from an angel of light to a prince of darkness. You see, we don't want to look on the success of others with a jealous eye, because that will do nothing but destroy us. Envy turned toward another soon leads to wrath. Job said it in Job 5, verse 2, "For wrath kills a foolish man, and envy slays a simple one." So utterly destructive. The anger of Daniel's peers toward him grew out of their envy, and it turned so vile that they soon sought not just to ruin him, they actually wanted to have him put to death, as we're going to see. It's why Solomon also wrote in Proverbs 27:4, "Wrath is cruel, and anger is a torrent. It's like a raging river." But he says, "But who is able to stand before jealousy?" Kind of speaks to how wicked and evil jealousy is, doesn't it? Was this not one of the main motivations of the priests and elders as they plotted against Jesus Christ to have him crucified? As we read in Matthew 27:18, even Pilate saw that they had turned against Christ and had turned Christ over to him because they were envious of Jesus Christ. So Daniel's enemies, they began to watch his every move, to observe him as he went about doing the king's business, and they were hoping to find some occasion against him. They wanted to catch him in something that they could make hay with, so to speak. some instant of neglect. Or maybe Daniel would show partiality somehow in his dealings. Some small infraction that they could turn into some unpardonable wrong with which to accuse him. They were desperate to find some little molehill to make into a huge mountain against Daniel. As Solomon wrote, there is nothing new under the sun. Do we see that going on today in the world around us? Absolutely we do. People's dealings with each other are filled with people taking nothing and trying to make something big or bad out of it, usually based on their feelings of envy or jealousy toward the other person. But as it says here, they could find no fault. They could find nothing with which to charge Daniel. And here again we see an admirable trait in Daniel that all of us who profess to be followers of Christ should exhibit on our lives. No fault and no charge can people find in you and me, or they should not be able to. We should be people who truly walk the walk and not just talk the talk. Our way of life and our demeanor should be harmless in our whole conduct, in our conversation, the words we speak, so that even though there might be people who choose to do us harm, who want to do us harm, they really can't find occasion for blame. Oh, they can make up things. They can lie about us, but they can't speak truth about us in a negative way. This is why we should not only strive to reflect God's ways in our interactions with others. Are you ready? But we are to bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. 2 Corinthians 10:5. Every thought. As Mr. Jackson quoted, you know, we're going to be judged by every idle word. Now there's some, should say, discussion about what that means. You can take it literally to mean if every silly, nonsensical thing that comes out of my mouth, I'm going to be judged for. Can God do that? Absolutely. I don't think a person would lose out on eternal life because of that. But I think the intent is more along the way of spiritual talk, spiritual words, things you speak that aren't in line with what God says. Those are the idle words that we're going to be judged by, more so than just everything that comes out of our mouth. Because I know I don't control my tongue like I should. You all do. I don't. I want to go over to 1 Peter. Hold your place here in Daniel again. Let's go over to 1 Peter 2. Because I think Peter, in many places, but here especially I like it here in 1 Peter chapter 2, if we want a good grasp of what our conduct should be, if you want something to live up to, 1 Daniel 2, verse 11. He writes, "Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust which war against the soul." Remember, we're in this spiritual battle every minute of every day because our archenemy Satan is trying to destroy us, and we've talked about that in the past. Continuing in verse 12, he says, "You and I are to have our conduct honorable among the Gentiles." Everyone that's not in the body of Christ, if you want to look at it that way. "That when they speak against you as evildoers," and they're going to do that even more and more as time grows to an end, as the scriptures show us, says, "they may by your good works," which they, notice, which they observe, "glorify God in the day of visitation." So when people see you and I in our daily lives, in our daily interactions with them, when they observe you living by what you believe, they're going to glorify God in the day that they experience who the true God is. Because they're going to remember what they observed in God's people. It should make us think real long and hard about how we live our lives. Do others see us in our doing the will of God as faithful and wise servants? Let's go back to Daniel. So they couldn't find fault in Daniel as among his conduct among the people in doing the king's business. So how were these men going to come up with something to bring Daniel down? They wanted so desperately to destroy this man because they were so jealous and envious of him. Let's continue in verse 5. Then these men said, "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God." That speaks volumes about Daniel. They were going to direct their search for something to use against Daniel in relation to his relationship to God and his obedience to God, his worship of God. They couldn't find anything else in the laws of the kingdom to bring against him. So they wanted to contrive, as we will see, a new law in which they hoped to ensnare Daniel. It was by this contrived scheme, working through the established governmental processes, very interesting. They didn't go outside what the law allowed them to do. They worked within the law to bring about a circumstances where they could accuse Daniel. Your mind can think of all sorts of scenarios today and in the future that this could be true. They were hoping to convict Daniel in something they knew of a surety about Daniel. They knew that he was faithful toward his God. They couldn't have known that if Daniel hadn't shown by his actions that he was faithful toward God. They observed Daniel, and they knew that he would not forsake his God. Remember, Daniel was over 70 years old at this time. He had lived all of his adult life in complete obedience to God while living among the Gentile people. There was no doubt in those who knew Daniel that he was faithful toward God. Ask ourselves, if you or I were hauled into court and we were accused of living our lives in obedience to the living God, would we be found guilty as charged? I hope we would be. We're not often judged by others outside the church by how we observe the Sabbath or tithe or what we eat or don't eat. As a general rule, people give little attention to these things because, as it says in 1 Corinthians 2:14, these are all foolishness to other people. They don't look at us and observe how well we do to keep the Sabbath. But they do recognize a bad temper. They do recognize selfishness. They recognize conceit. They recognize dishonesty. They recognize all the works of the flesh listed in Galatians 5. They recognize these things when they see them, and they judge us as Christians by our conduct. And as Daniel told King Belshazzar, they can find us weighed in the balances and found wanting. We don't want that. Verse 6. Now we're going to see the ugly underbelly of the devious workings within this political environment that surrounded King Darius. Here in verse 6. So these governors and satraps thronged before the king and said thus to him, "King Darius, live forever." Interesting, it says they thronged before the king. The Hebrew meaning here is to run together with tumult. In other words, they approached the king hastily and tumultuously, giving him little time for reflection on what they were proposing. It's a ploy we human beings use all the time. Sometimes when we are rushed by our own impatience or by our political system or by others to make decisions hastily, we often come to regret such decisions, as we will see King Darius came to regret his decision. Verse 7. Notice that word, all the governors and satraps, our governors of the kingdom, and the administrators and satraps, the counselors and advisors, have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Can you picture these guys? I can. I'm sure you can too. Notice the strategy. They were presenting this proposal for this law as though it had been conceived after mature deliberation. They presented it as being looked at and spoken about and counseled together by all the men in the government of the king. And they presented it as all of them were in agreement that this was a wonderful and a great thing, and that they had done all they could to establish this firm decree. The consensus for this decree, that word's having trouble with me right now, were unanimous. That's what they wanted the king to think. But now, we know there was one governor who was not in agreement with this. So what were they doing? Lying through their teeth. It was just a few that contrived this event, if you would. But they wanted the king to think everybody doing it. What did King Solomon say? Nothing new under the sun. Do we see that evident today? Absolutely. Absolutely, we see this. A few contrive all of these things, and then they want it to present it to the world like, everybody's in agreement with this. Everybody thinks this is wonderful. They were doing the same thing. Our carnal nature, inspired by Satan, is truly an ugly beast. Let's continue here in verse 8 and 9. Notice they continue. It says, "Now, O king, establish this decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter." Therefore, after being flattered and rushed into this thing, they were playing him like a cheap fiddle, okay? I think you all can see that. He signed the writing of the decree. They pressed the king, played him just on his pride and vanity, and he fell for it and he signed the decree. What this basically did for the king made him feel like he was more than just a king. He was now a god. Because nobody could petition anything by anybody else except by him. They couldn't go to their gods or the true God. They had to come to the king if they wanted anything. Did that play to his vanity? Absolutely. But it was a law that was contrived for one intent only, and that was to just destroy another man. Let's turn back to Daniel again here. Let's go to verse 10. He signed the decree. "Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home. And in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees 3 times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days." I wonder how Daniel came to know of the law. I don't know. We're not told. It's not really important, I guess. No doubt there was some form of communication made throughout the kingdom regarding the passage of this law. And one would assume that Daniel fully understood the source of this law and what its intent was. You see, more times than not, when there are people against us, we usually know who those people are. And of course, hopefully, we're especially cautious in our dealings with them, as I'm sure Daniel was. So what was Daniel's reaction? He went home and he prayed as he always had. Now, less faithful among us might have rationalized this a little differently. We could have reasoned in our minds that, well, you know, 30 days isn't all that long. I'm sure God will understand if I just forego praying to Him for 30 days. Or we could have said, well, I'll just pray at night, in the dark, with the doors and the windows closed, silently, so nobody will ever know. I think if that would have been our choice, would have been Daniel's choice, those prayers wouldn't have been worth much, because they would have been done out of fear. And God has not given you and I a spirit of fear. No, Daniel threw open the windows and he prayed as he always had, three times a day. You see, Daniel did not fear the face of men. Daniel lived by Matthew 10:28. Do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear Him who is able to destroy both soul and body in the grave. You see, Daniel's whole life was one of obeying God rather than man. It's a choice we make today, whether we consciously think about it or not. It's a choice we may have more challenging times ahead to make. So Daniel went home and prayed. What he prayed isn't recorded here. It only tells us that he gave thanks to God. Now, what does that tell us? Now, it is reasonable to think that Daniel did pray about this situation he was in. He probably called out to God for His mercy and for God's intervention. But all we're told is that he gave God thanks. So what it tells us is that in our prayers, even in times of great trouble, we should never fail to give God thanks for His mercy. Because that's what Daniel's example was. Verse 11, notice, then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. How did they know Daniel would be at his home in the upper room with the windows open praying? Because that's what he always did. Nothing changed for Daniel. They knew it was his custom, and they also knew that Daniel was faithful to his God. So it was easy for them to witness in some way how they did this. I don't know. It doesn't say. But they witnessed Daniel doing this. They didn't have to mount some elaborate covert operation to find the evidence to convict Daniel. Because Daniel was not about to forsake his relationship with God out of fear of what might happen to him. Verse 12. And they went before the king, and they spoke concerning the king's decree. Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, the thing is true according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. So they took their evidence before the king. And notice, they didn't mention Daniel right at the onset. No, they reminded the king that he had signed this decree, which could not be changed. The king himself could not change this decree. It was set permanently for 30 days. And they well knew this. You can just imagine the pious attitude that these men had as they came before the king. They were feigning such great loyalty and respect for the king's authority and law when they had absolutely none. Again, they were just playing him like a cheap fiddle. Verse 13. So they answered and said before the king, notice the words, this Daniel, who's one of the captives of Judah, the sarcasm was just rolling off of their lips and their tongue. He does not show due regard for you, O king, or for the decree that you have signed, but he makes his petition three times a day. Again, we see the seething jealousy pouring out of their mouths and their hearts. Something you and I must guard against constantly. We need to always consider our own hearts in our relationship to other people. Verse 14, and the king, when he heard these words, notice, was greatly displeased with himself, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver Daniel. It hit him like a load of bricks, didn't it? He realized then what had happened. He realized what he had allowed to happen. It doesn't show that he was angry at these men, although he takes care of them later, as we'll see. But his first thought was what he himself had done. I think it speaks a lot about this king. It really does. And he worked as hard as he could to try to find a way to save Daniel from the penalty of this law. Verse 15. Then these men approached the king, and they said to the king, "Know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and Persians that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed." They were not about to let the king find a way to save Daniel, to find a way around his own law. Do you see the evil that jealousy and envy can have? Once it takes over our hearts and our minds, it knows no bounds. It'll stop at nothing. Verse 16. So the king had to give the command. And they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke to Daniel. Saying to Daniel, "Your God, whom you serve continually," notice, "he will deliver you." So the king relented, commanded Daniel to be thrown in the king's den, the lion's den. But he so told Daniel, he said, "Your God will deliver you." How did the king know this? How would he have known this? Because Daniel lived what he believed. And it was evident for all to see. And even here, this Gentile king was expressing a faith in God because of the faith he saw in the life of Daniel. It's truly amazing when you just stop and think about that for a moment. It is amazing. Verse 17. Then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his signet ring, with the signets of his lords, that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. So not only did they have the king stick his ring in the clay to put his signet in there, they all did it themselves. They were going to make sure there was no way the king was going to save Daniel. I'm going to inject something here in this story that I found very interesting, and I think you might too. From the time of the passing of the law, that we've just gone through all of this, until Daniel was thrown into the lion's den, we do not have recorded one word being spoken by Daniel. Did you ever stop and think about that? Daniel knew that he was guilty under the law of man. And he willingly accepted the penalty of that law. He didn't mount a protest. He didn't hire a group of attorneys to try to defend him. No, he had broken man's laws. He knew that. In reality, Daniel was following the example exhibited by Jesus Christ that's recorded in 1 Peter 2, verse 23, who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. This tells us that there are times and situations when we just have to stop. We have gone as far as we can go. We've done all we can. It is God who must now take up the battle. And this is what Daniel knew. He knew it was futile for him to fight against this because he was guilty. The law was the law, and he had broken the law. The penalty was being thrown in the den of lions. He now put the whole situation into the hands of God. Of course, Daniel didn't need to plead his own case very much, I guess, because the king was trying to plead it for him. But still, it shows where Daniel's faith was. Not in man, not in what man could do to save him, but only in what God could and would do. Verse 18. Now the king went to his palace, and he spent the night fasting, and no musicians were brought before him. Also, his sleep went from him. Then the king arose early in the morning and went in haste to the den of lions. Have you and I spent nights like this? Unable to sleep, tossing and turning, can't shut our minds off because we're anticipating the events that the morning is going to bring. Sure, we've all been through such times. Verse 20. And when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God. Wow. Here is a Gentile king recognizing that the God that Daniel worshipped is a living God. He wasn't some stone pagan idol worship thing anywhere. He was a living God. Has your God whom you serve continually been able to deliver you from the lions? Again, how would this king have recognized that the God that Daniel worshipped was a living God? A living being that acted in the lives of those who serve him? Because he saw God actively working in the life of Daniel. The king didn't doubt God, Daniel's faithfulness, but as these words show us, his faith wasn't quite there yet, because he wasn't absolutely 100% sure that God was going to deliver Daniel. It shows us that sometimes our faith isn't as strong as it needs to be. But it shows us that we can pray to God for Him to make our faith stronger, to strengthen our faith. But even no matter what level of faith we may have right now at this moment, people should be able to witness in our lives the living God actively working. Just as this king, this Gentile king, saw the living God working in the life of Daniel. We can think about how that would be seen by other people. That's a subject for a whole different sermon, I'm sure. Verse 21. Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. Notice the respect Daniel is showing this king who had just had him thrown into the den of lions. O king, live forever. It says, My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, so they have not hurt me because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. Here's the phrase that for me sums up Daniel's relationship with God. And it tells us why God could and would intervene in Daniel's life in such a dramatic and powerful way. Daniel was found innocent before God. Does that mean Daniel was free of sin? No, it does not. Not at all. In fact, later on in chapter 9, verses 7 and 18, he says as such. He knew he wasn't a man without sin. That wasn't what God meant. Daniel, rightly so, placed obedience to God and God's law above that of man. Matthew 22:21 tells us, "Render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." That's why we pay our taxes. That's why we obey the laws of the land, as long as they don't run contrary to God's law. And if we break man's law, we accept the penalty for that infraction, just like Daniel did. We strive to live our lives as Paul said to us and said of himself in Acts 24:16. Paul said, "I always strive to have a conscience without offense toward God and man." When we do that, we can then follow Peter's instruction. Hold your place and go back to Peter again. 1 Peter 2 this time. Verse 13. 1 Peter 2:13. You may have to stop the tongue of that dog there, Mr. Jackson. 1 Peter 2 and verse 13. This is how we have to live our lives. "Therefore, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme, or to his governors, as to those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. As free, yet not using liberty as a cloak for vice, but as bondservants of God, honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king." Daniel's disobedience to the king was not out of contempt for the king, not out of contempt for his law and authority. But it was from regard to the true King of Kings, who must be honored and obeyed above all everything that is man's. No law of man can supersede the law of God. Daniel was found innocent before God in his whole manner because he chose obedience to God above even his own life. How about you and me? Are we there yet? I'm not. I want to be. Not there yet. God vindicated Daniel's innocence by delivering him alive from the lion's den. Had Daniel done the king wrong? No, not at all. He had provided to the king a most powerful witness of the reality of the living God. Notice the king's reaction in verse 23. "Now the king was exceedingly glad for him," for Daniel, "and he commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he believed in his God." You see, the king and the people witnessed a miracle. A miracle of the power of the living God. Again, the very same God that you and I worship today. No difference. The same God, the same power, the same ability, the same desires for His people. Let's complete the story in verse 24. And the king gave the command, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions. Them, their children, and their wives. Remember, this was a Gentile king. And the lions overpowered them and broke all of their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. Kind of a ferocious bunch of lions, weren't they? That's why it was such a miracle for Daniel to come out of there without a scratch. Let's continue here in verse 25. Notice what the king did. And King Darius wrote, "To all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues." Remember, this is a Gentile king. "And he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian." Astounding. Look what the one man's example did in this whole Medo-Persian kingdom because of Daniel's faithfulness to his God. It is such a powerful example for us to read, for us to study, for us to meditate on, for us to pray about, so that we can receive the help we need to build this kind of relationship with God. That's what we want. That's what we must have. So let's use Daniel's simple example. It's not so simple, is it? But let's use his encouraging example, along with many others in the Bible, to help all of us personally grow in faith. That's what we need. It's what we've got to have. It's what we must have. Let's use it to help us always, always to be found innocent before our God.